Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 20. 20 weeks of Gwent. The ceiling has been broken as ranked players race to the top of the leaderboard all over again. Our guests today are Gwent City's HG3 and Manti, and they join us to talk about the metagame and what might be coming in the future. We're counting the days until the next patch on this episode of Commander's Horn. Thanks so much for joining us today by the Man of Steel himself, Josh Greyboxer. How are you doing this week?
Well, how are you doing, True King McBeard? I'm doing fine, man. Hey, thanks for introducing the show so well. We're really excited to bring you our two guests today, HG3 and Manti, two of the top players and content producers for Gwent as we know it. I'm doing great, man. I've been keeping to the streaming schedule, and I think, you know, we discussed this last year. Setting a streaming schedule and keeping to it takes so much discipline, but at the same time, it's so fun because you get like a number of people who are constantly in the channel, and they're excellent to have there. I've got, for example, one guy is always in there, Antiversum. This dude has the best metal song requests. I mean, and then we get Nub in there, who's requesting the Wub Wubs all the time. But streaming's been going great, and been trying out some non-dwarves, non-Vikings for a little bit this week to see how it goes on ranked.
Right.
How about
on,
you?
Right on. Yeah, things have been going well for me. This week I decided to see if I could commit to the monster faction and rank up on rank mode. So I put together a cool Aridin deck. I'll put the link in the show notes because I wrote a guide for it as well. As you know, I like to write guides. True King Aridin focuses on a solo Aridin, basically his solo album. You put him out there, you buff him, you use gold units to support in round one, you ensure that you keep Aridin, and you control from there. So basically, the idea is that you just control, and that's enough, and you can win the round and keep Aridin on the board pretty much the entire game, and he just sits there observing his subjects. And it hasn't been bad. Got rank 10 the other day, and I'm going to keep going until I feel like I'm sufficiently hit a barrier with this deck, and I haven't seen it yet. So it's been tons of fun. And our guests today are Manti and HG3, and they provided us with a lot of intelligent conversation about the metagame, where the game is going. Cannot wait for you to hear it. But I think first we're going to go into a little bit of news, but I will tell you before we do that, the Commander's Horn records on Wednesdays and posts weekly on Thursdays. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. We love when listeners reach out. Send your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at Commander's Horn.
So now let's get into some of the news. If you guys have been playing ranked mode in Gwent, you've noticed, perhaps, that there's been a little bit of a ratings buff. And that is an intentional change that was brought on, I believe, server-side on Friday the 13th. And, what do you think of it, McBeard? I think we're getting about 3 or 4 times as many points as we were getting previously. On the last podcast, we discussed how the developers had thought maybe the top players would have already achieved rank 15, and with these new points, we can see how they would think that. So the change is now people are climbing, you know, incredibly fast, and you get a ton of points for a win. So I feel like it's easier to climb, and it's also more rewarding to play ranked mode.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to win the games, but it is true. I have won games where I've gotten 75 points, and I was watching the White Wolf stream one night. I believe he got 80-something, You got 80 something for a win. So, and you'll get pitted against people who have really high MMR sometimes.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of playing, I believe, the current number one player, Garuna, when I was a meager, like, rank 300 or so, or like between 300 and 200. He was at the time rank 4, 600 MMR above me. And if I had won that game, I don't even know what that number would have looked like. I did not win that game. I lost 3 points. Just 3 points.
Oh my gosh.
So it is still tuned. It isn't just that you just lose a bunch when you lose, no matter who you lose to. It just seems like the spectrum of people that you can face and the results of that is more accurately reflecting a healthy ladder that is climbable, and
yes.
B, maybe a little bit better about shuffling and ordering us off in skill level. So like I said, I hit rank 10. You hit rank 10 as well?
I'm 11 now.
You're rank 11 now. Okay. So we know that rank 10 and 11 are the higher ranks at the moment, but that's continually...
6 hours from now, they'll be low. They'll be pleb league in about 6 hours.
Well, it's just we know that the people are still rising. People are still getting points that are breaking higher and higher and achieving new ranks. I haven't even seen what the rank 12 icon looks like yet. I'm sure I'll see it in a couple of days. But... it's very exciting. I mean, we're gonna see who's gonna hit rank 15 first. It might happen in this content cycle.
Yeah, and well, the post from the developers states that they have recently introduced changes to the way points are being awarded and deducted. So officially, they did make this change that they should more reflect the player's performance in the games. So I feel like maybe. Some of that tuning has to do with who you're matchmade against, but some of it may also have to do with how much rating you gain based on your performance. And one of those factors, or at least many of the factors to me, are they must be internal, because we don't know what factors we could do while in a game to achieve additional rankings, because I don't know about you, McBeard, but it doesn't matter how close the person is in rating to me. I seem to always get a different number, and... is that reflective of my performance while in the game? Does that take into account factors that we can't see? Or is it merely a comparison of each of our rankings in the games played? So what they're saying now is that it does reflect performance. But what performance does it reflect?
All I know is that I spectacularly lose, so I obviously have better performance when I lose.
Yes.
I imagine that's what it is. But it's definitely, yeah, I think it's just a bunch of different tweaks in there to make sure that players and their performance and their skill level ultimately shall be sorted a bit more accurately. And since we're talking about players at a very high skill level, I think it's a good time to mention the Gwentleman's Open, which is this weekend, January 21st and 22nd. That is this Saturday and Sunday. So once again, the link will be in the show notes. Registration is closing soon. It is open at the time of this recording. We're recording actually Thursday morning at the moment.
It'll be open today and all of Friday as well.
Okay, great. 232 players are currently registered, and while this is an open tournament, I am not sure if the tournament can handle more than 256 players. So
it'll
again,
literally break the tournament.
If we don't want to
sign
do
up.
That.
If we sign up more than 256 people, it may break the tournament. I think it will increase the cap to 512. But from the discussion with the other Gwentleman, it's going to be a funny. It's going to be a funny situation if we get above 256. So if you haven't joined and you do plan to interact, please join the Gwentleman Open and experience the highest level of competitive play.
Yeah, and especially considering this amount of people. So I think that the spectrum is there. I think that everybody who has had interest in competitive Gwent is signed up. And there are a few more spots left before they have to maybe close it at 256 or whatever happens to happen. But I think that when the admins of the Gwentleman put this together, the 256 maybe wasn't something realistic, but here we are at 232. There's a lot of interest in Gwent, so I think it's really good for the community, really good for growth of the game to see this level of interest in the competitive scene. I will be shoutcasting the finals, which occur on the following weekend on the 28th and 9th, although I think it's specifically the 29th in which I will
be
involved.
Yeah, the shoutcast is the 29th.
The shoutcast is the 29th. I will be joined by some other members of the Gwentleman. I think it may depend on who actually makes it to the finals, but I do know know that there are some people lined up to join me and some familiar faces and voices. I am sure if you watch the streams or pay attention to the Gwendolyn content at Gwendolyn.com, you probably, or the Discord as well, you probably know who's coming. But I will let them do the announcement there. But I will say that I am going to be part of it, and I'm honored to do that. So looking forward to that weekend as well. And we'll talk about that one more time on the next podcast, probably.
So we have a bit of a busy week next week, and we'll get the podcast out, and I'm not sure how much we can talk about your shoutcasting. One thing I wanted to bring up before we moved away from the news and the ranked mode changes is that they tracked the ranked mode play rate and win rate the day following the changes, and the win rates were very even across factions. We had about 49.77 for Northern Realms, 52.44% win rate for Monsters, 51.96% for Squirtle, and 49.93% for Skellige. And we realize that there is a lot of play that happens below the top 1,000 ranks. Of course, there's a lot of new players, free-to-play players, and that's reflected in the played rates. Skellige's played the least at 18.6%, Squirtle was played second least at 19.7%, then Monsters and Northern Realms were pretty even at 29.89%. and 31.81% apiece. And that's just interesting information for me. We're seeing a lot of play of Northern Realms and Monsters, maybe, for the newer players, and the Skellige and Squirtle decks that are competitive are expensive. And that might be reflected in their played rates.
Monsters are pretty strong out of the box, and I think we all experienced that when the beta launched. Monsters were pretty strong. It was really hard to beat
the servers, too.
What's that?
Kill
the servers.
Remember gold Aridin?
Aridin was gold at first in the closed beta as well, and you could also keep gold units with the passive. So playing Geralt and Aridin in passing was a strategy that was used to build card advantage, and was you kind of hoped it didn't stay like that, where like that play style was always there.
Yeah, they removed that unfun aspect of the monster passive.
I'm trying to make it unfun for my opponents though right now, doing that a lot with Aridin, but the fact that you can't keep Geralt or gold cards, I think, was the big one. Anyway. That is a tale of old.
tales of yore of Gwent. One of the new things in Gwent is the new Your Face in Gwent charity auction. This is being hosted over there by the guys on the Gwent team, and they are raising money to celebrate the 25th finale of the Great Orchestra of Christmas Charity. And so you can have like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have your face be on a Gwent card. The objective of this charity is to save the lives of children in pediatric wards and to provide dignified medical care for patients in geriatric wards. Mm-hmm, It goes to a great cause. And you can find the auction over at playgwent.com/WOSP. And right now, the bid to have your face on a Gwent card is over 10,000 Polish zloty, which is about $2,500 US.
So great. Yeah, that's great news coming out of Gwent. It's a great charity that they are raising money for. So I think that's very cool as well. The extra incentive of being on a Gwent card. Definitely check that out if you haven't heard about that yet.
I wish I could do it. I mean, can you imagine? I would have to demand to be on a dwarf.
Yeah. You would be. Yeah, it would be really weird if you weren't on a. There would be Greybeard the Destroyer.
Imagine if they
perhaps.
Put me on an elf.
Yeah, the world's first bearded elf, shunned by his own kin.
I'd shun my own kin too. I'd walk alone.
Walk alone, the lone wolf. That sounds familiar.
The Wanderer.
Well, speaking of two guys that don't wander alone, these guys are a team. They come to us from Gwent City. Manti and HD3 are going to be joining us right after this. Look forward to talking to them about who they are, how they met, and how they look at Gwent right now as we approach the end of the current competitive meta. Stay tuned. We're coming back with HD3 and Manti after this. Today, our guests, Plural, are two very good players, streamers, and content creators, the men behind Gwent City, HG3, and Manti. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, how's it going, guys? We're very excited to be here. Of course, we're big fans of Commander's Horn. We've been speaking for a long time, so I feel like this is a good connection to make, and it's going to be a great episode of the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm really happy that you invited me. You know, I can scratch this one out of the bucket.
The bucket list.
The bucket list that you scratch off.
Yeah. Yes.
I love it, man.
You put it in the bucket.
You put it in the bucket. It puts the scratch-offs in the bucket. No, thanks, guys, for joining us. We're huge fans of Gwent City. If you guys haven't checked out Gwent City, go to gwentcity.com. It automatically links to their YouTube page, and there's tons of excellent, high-quality Gwent content, videos for all the Gwent fans out there.
Yeah, very competitive stuff as well, specifically the competitive stuff. And I think it's really great. You guys have such a great relationship with the competitive community. And you are very high-ranked players yourselves. How have you been finding ranked mode throughout this kind of very first competitive patch so far?
Well, just to clarify, we were very high-ranked players. But due to the reset, then you took a nap. We went to sleep one night and woke up and it was a whole new world, which is cool because it's like re-experiencing it again. But I think, speaking from my perspective, I think ranked provides that kind of motivational factor that may have not been there before, where I could just play loose and do whatever I'd want to. But now I feel like I have something to work towards, which helps when you're streaming almost every weekday and you just keep going at it. So I think I really like the ranked mode so far, and I've enjoyed it. And you get to play a lot of good matches against good players, and that's how we make a lot of our connections.
Mm-hmm. For me, on my personal experience, it has waking up that competitive level. And I try to always push myself a little bit more, even with my main account and with my free-to-play account. And it makes me always look forward for what's about to come in the future.
Yeah, and I think that watching both of your streams quite a lot is you guys have a very similar competitive aspect to your streams and to your Gwent play. And I agree that before ranked mode came out, you guys are right. I mean, it was almost like play as fun of a deck as you want because it's casual. The points don't matter and everybody wins, you know? And now that ranked mode's out, every single decision matters. And I think, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like that brings out something in Gwent that's very unique to the card game, and that's the decision-making aspect.
Yeah, I think at the highest level, one of the most interesting things you're seeing is the variance in leaders picked for similar kinds of decks. I mean, we're seeing Francesca right now, you can see Ithne, you can see Bruver for Scoia'tael, which is kind of astounding, and it kind of shows the potential for this game to have the most subtle variety that means the most in terms of the context of competitiveness and high level interactions. And I think that's really a promising thing moving forward because we've been told there are going to be lots more leaders, which is going to give us a lot more variance as more cards come in as well. So I'm super excited about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, to me, this game feels like very, very evolved game compared to the relative state that is just been word and beta. And yet it feels so polished and everything. Yes, we can add a couple things here and there, but it feels fantastic, and I love the meta that is going on right now. I love everything that is flowing into this ranking system.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You make a really good point about how all three Scoia'tael leaders are represented, even in the top part of the ladder where Scoia'tael is probably its most dominant. And we'll talk about that later. We're going to get into some of the more deeper meta stuff. But I do think, just to touch on that, because we just talked about it, I think the fact that all the leaders are represented and there are subtle changes in each deck, you really have to play around so much because you can't be sure. Like, you know, some decks run Igni, but some decks never run Igni. But they are very similar, so you can't be sure until you've seen, you know, half the player's hand or even until you've actually seen the card itself. But I think that's a really good place for Scoia'tael, even though it's very dominant to begin with. But there's more. We can talk about that a little bit later. I want to hear about a little bit more about you two. You are content creators for Gwent, and you've been doing it for a little while now. But how did you guys meet? How did you guys find yourself making content for Gwent?
Oh, it's been a while. Manti and I met 14 years ago, I think. We actually played a little game you guys may have not heard of called World of Warcraft together.
Yes.
It was a tiny game.
Underground game.
Not many people actually played it. And we met back then, and we've stayed in touch throughout, and we played almost every single game there's been since then together in some way, shape, or form. There have been so many bumps, but we eventually made it to The Witcher 3, which came out in a time where games just weren't doing it for us. And that game was just phenomenal. And, like, for a single-player game, I'm not much of a single-player game player. Like, I like interactiveness, I like competitiveness, multiplayer aspects. But that game felt so immersive that I felt like I was in an MMO at times. And having, you know, Manti on comms with me, it was like a journey that we shared together, you know, at the risk of sounding like the cheesiest person in the history of the world.
Well, yeah, you can share your thoughts and your triumphs and your discoveries when you're traveling all over the landscape and being an open world. Yeah, it does kind of feel like an MMO.
Yeah, it was a very enjoyable experience because we started the game around the same time and we were on comps, and then like I will do things and then he will be like, how did you do that? Or why would you do that? Our decisions really changed and shaped that game. So it was very fun to know that he was going a different path than I did.
It's all about walking the path.
And so you guys got your start in World of Warcraft and somehow ended up together at Witcher 3, which I presume you guys played some Gwent in?
Oh, a lot of Gwent. Yes.
Were you guys hungry for a multiplayer version of Gwent when you were playing it, when you were sort of simultaneously playing The Witcher 3?
Yeah, I think we played card games too along the way. And like when we played Gwent inside of The Witcher 3, we were always talking about how cool it was and how much potential it had. Because it was a different kind of card game, and it feels different. Everyone will acknowledge that. And I think that kind of like rejuvenates your spirit for online card games, because there are a lot of like games that fit into this one model right now, which is fine, because then if someone refines the model, it's a great game. But due to like the strategic natures of Gwent and the kind of bluffing that exists, it feels like almost like a poker game in and of itself at times, where if you make the right call, you win. If you make the wrong call, you absolutely get blown out. I really like that about the game, and I feel like the skill cap is extremely high, and that's something I like to have in games that I play.
I remember I talked to an NPC, and he started explaining the one thing and everything, and I was like, okay, this seems kind of okay, it's all right, and then I played it, and then I played it again, and so on, and it was so addictive. Out of my 300 hours on The Witcher, like 150 hours were spent on Gwent, and I had so much fun, and I always wanted to have, like, maybe, like, on my brain, they will have to, like, just, like, a patch where you could play with other people, but no, they made a game, and I was so happy the moment I heard that they were making a Gwent solo game.
Yeah, and I want to just expand on something else that was said here about how there's a very, very typical model in card games. And when you say you play card games on your way through World of Warcraft and The Witcher as well together, I'm assuming you've played, the games that have that model where, you know, you get mana every turn, cards have a cost, the archetypes of tempo and aggro and control are very much understood from game to game. Do you feel like with Gwent coming out with this very unique style of play that it reset a lot of people's skill to zero as opposed to going from card game to card game? There was kind of an understood way of playing through resource management, and now it's card management and turn management. I felt like I had to relearn a lot of aspects kind of start from scratch on my understanding of how Gwent will work and build it up from the beginning.
Yeah, I think the one thing that The Witcher's version of Gwent told us and stands strong still to this day in Gwent is that cards are your most important resource. Like, obviously in The Witcher 3, you emphasize a lot of disloyal, a lot of spies, because you just want to get as many cards as possible. And that's not as possible in the current form of Gwent, but understanding that your cards are the most limited resource and having to play around that is so important. I know in other card games, like, sometimes drawing is a prominent strategy, but your restricting force is the mana you're talking about. So people have to kind of shift that mindset for Gwent, and it is the most difficult transition because you feel like you should be able to play this at a certain time and it's just really strong. But if you're not keeping in mind your cards and, you know, how you're going to affect going into round two with one less card based on what you play and stuff like that, it can really change the entirety of the game. So I think it's a tough transition, but it's an interesting one.
To me, I had to learn self-restraint and adaptive thinking. Most of he laughs, but because he knows me. If the restraint comes out not even before the game starts, whenever I'm making the deck, I have to already have restraint as, you know, 6 and 4, the rule. And it was very new to me. Also, once in game, I didn't have the mana limitations. I have myself to be responsive for all my actions. And that to me was really important, and it was new experience. I had to have self-restraint.
Do you mean like you wanted to play all your gold cards at once, or you wanted to play like all your strongest cards first?
If this was a different game, I would be like all in.
Yeah, round one all in was Manti's meta way before it was the game's meta. he was pioneering that in October, round one all ins.
And you see that a lot, I think, with new players in the lower ranks too. I think that's a very common occurrence because that feels comfortable to them. I have to win this round, therefore I have all these cards that I can spend. I know I'm going to draw a couple more anyway, so why don't I spend all these? And then eventually you start thinking about other plays like setup and bluffing. So I wanted to ask you guys, what is your particular play style with Gwent? Because there's a couple of different schools of thought, of course. There's the aggro, and there's also setup that goes into different sorts of combos. Do you like a combo deck? Do you prioritize efficient play of your cards to get the most strength on the board, or do you prioritize countering the other player?
I think typically my main objective is to buy my opponent's win conditions. And that's the murky part about Scoia'tael right now, is because it's tougher to identify what a win condition is in Scoia'tael because everything just works. But if you're playing Skellige, It's kind of more defined. Like, if you get a Commander Sworn in an early round, if you get Coral out, or if you get Harald's ability used, if you can narrow down those win conditions and force your opponent to use them maybe two in one round, then your odds moving forward are so much greater of victory. And that is challenging to do against, you know, players with great discipline, such as CML, who is the Skellige god, undoubtedly. So, like, stuff like that is, like, a challenge. It's like, how do I force this out of them while still not over-investing myself? But I think thinking of the game in terms of win conditions, what I can do to manipulate them out of the opponent is kind of one of my foremost thoughts in terms of Gwent right now.
Yeah, my personal playstyle is actually very known. I like to win round one, and I like to punish my enemy for losing round one. I like to pressure and make them think that I'm going to go as far as I can and just try to go as much. So they will try. I will try to make them misplay in a way and then say, okay, I'm out. Because they have to play as far as I say so, since I won round one. That is my comfort zone. But I understand that it's doesn't always work that way. So I have, once again, I have to adapt and have some self-restraint.
Yeah, and it's probably really all about the decks that are being chosen. But sometimes, I mean, I gravitate towards specific kinds of decks. Sometimes if I feel like playing a certain way, like if I want to play more of a controlling game, I tend to kind of flow towards monsters. At the moment, that's where I'm at right now. But and then if you want to play just like explosive turn after turn, you might want to go Northern Realms if you just want to flex all day long. So I think that you can pick a deck that goes along with your personality. I like that. That was a good question.
Thank you.
So speaking of decks and picking decks that go with certain flows and styles of play, I think it'd be a good time. Just kind of, we're at the tail end, kind of the sunset of this competitive meta, even though we have had a huge change in the last little bit with the ranking system, in that winning and losing is now as swingy as it was in the first, like the very first kind of couple of calibration games, like rank two and three and stuff.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, oof. So now...
Wood League. We're back to Wood League now.
Yep. Rank eight is the new rank five or whatever. I don't know.
I'm rock bottom.
It's a new rock bottom. New Wood League.
So things have been kind of turned on their head right now, but I think that the decks haven't changed, but rank mode has gotten very, very hungry again. So I think we're seeing another evolution of the decks. I'm not quite sure what's happening right now, but I know that things are a little different than they were last week. So I think that kind of in the sunset of the patch, with a new content patch coming, it would be a great time with both of you on the show if we can review each faction and kind of see, kind of like start to finish through the patch, where these decks have come from and where they're going and kind of where they're going to land in our prediction as new cards and a new faction is coming right around the corner.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday someone will find a way to take you down.
So the four factions have gone through kind of ebbs and flows, you can say. Some factions have been stronger than others. But I'd like to start the topic off with monsters, which is my current. I think I'm going through a monsters renaissance with myself. I think that there's, I think that people have for a long time believed that they couldn't really compete. They don't really have the ability to thin as well as some of the other factions do, specifically Squirtle and Northern Realms, and they don't have a way of gaining card advantage in the same way as well. Although they can do it, I guess, with sheer strength. But I'd like to know, kind of between the competitive Gels decks that have been showing up, kind of mid and high ladder, and some of the other Ereveridans of Eridan and Dagon, I'd like to know just generally your thoughts on monsters and how they have come from being the most dominant deck back in a couple patches ago, maybe near, for starters, I think they are still maybe some of the most dominant budget cards.
Yeah.
But going from kind of how they went from being the most oppressive, I'm so sick of seeing monsters kind of deck, to being a little bit more low-key in this patch. HG3, what do you think about monsters right now?
So, I could sum up my thoughts by telling you I haven't played monsters at all this patch.
Okay.
But I liked monsters. I played them a lot in the previous patch. I played big monsters because it synergizes with their passive, which is tough to make good use of, which is probably one of the main points about monsters. Like, I'm not a fan of that passive. It's a lot of randomness to it where you keep one unit on your board after the round, but it just doesn't give you consistent value like Scoia'tael get, like Northern Realms and Skellige get. So I think that may be one of the issues. But the main issue for me in this patch was the reintroduction of weather being an important factor. And as such, green strength, which is buffed strength, took a big hit.
Yeah.
Not just for monsters, for every faction. Anyone that's using green strength is running a huge risk. So big monsters got just knocked out. I mean, if you're going to stack a row, if you're going to play witches, if you're going to play even toad, you're running the risk of just getting all of your investment wiped out in the most efficient way imaginable. That turned me away a little bit. And then also in terms of monsters bronze units, they don't really have the best core of units right now because muster is not in a great place. I think muster is looking to get a rework soon because when you have three units that you're attaching as a combo of one, and for example, the Wild Hunt Riders come out, it's 9 strength on the board if you're lucky and they're not all in your hand, and they're immune to weather. But if you try and look at the individual value of each of those cards, it's drastically low. Because as we talk about in Gwent Theory series, we want our base value to be kind of around 8 for each bronze card you're playing. And it just doesn't achieve that with muster cards. So they're low and they're very vulnerable to removal. Stuff like that has just scared me away from them right now. Especially in a meta where Yennefer is there. So Arrakas and Foglets can get taken out efficiently as well. I'm looking forward to some changes for that faction in general to make them more consistent despite whether or not weather is in or weather is out, just as a whole.
In my opinion, monsters were sub-dominant at the very beginning because it was very easy to build. You could have a small budget and a huge impact. As the meta changed and new patches came out, First Light came out, weather monsters were dead. Now, the reason why I believe that we don't see as many monsters is because you are going with a strategy. Sometimes, you know, it's a card game. Sometimes you just don't have those kind of cards on hand. So you kind of have to adapt the best that you can. Now, other classes, other factions, they make these answers because of First Light and everything. Or if you have bad hand, you can do Francesca. But monsters, I believe that the faction ability is what is hurting them from time to time. Because technically that ability is either you or your enemy are going to get screwed out of strength.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis of maybe why the RNG aspect of the monster's passive isn't quite working to its favor as strongly as maybe the other faction passives are working. I think that with weather being back and green buffs, as HG3 so aptly said, being effectively removed by weather. I mean, you can run the First Lights as your counter to weather, but it's going to take off all your buffs even when you do First Light. So I think that makes a huge difference to the buffing value monsters. And monsters, as Manti said, don't have any way to unbrick their hand.
It's funny how we were talking about musters and how in Gwent Wild Hunt, muster was monsters, like, they had it. They had musters.
The vampires and everything, man.
Exactly. But you look at how Northern Realms is right now with the way that they can Reaver scout all of their scouts from the deck, and they can then reinforce their units out if they want to, and how Squirtle can bring all their units out with Elven Mercenaries. What happened to monsters being the muster class? They're like the worst at it.
It's a role reversal, and it's just like, that's why I'm looking forward to a real rework of that, because I feel like if any deck should be swarming me, it's monsters. Like, where are all these elves popping up from? It doesn't really make sense.
Elven Blarney.
They're supposed to be crafty, but few in number or something, I think, lore-wise.
It's true, yeah. Just for me, I've been playing a variant where I try to keep Aridin on the board and buff Aridin and control everything else so I can really abuse the passive to its maximum potential. It's been going okay. I think it was played against me once, and then I gave it a shot, and it's been okay, but I think there's something there. I think there's something there in a controlling monsters, and I think in a world where it's easier to protect your green strength, that it's, Aridin being weather immune helps that, but Ard kind of just destroys him. But I think that there's a variant in there where you can kind of play a solo Aridin and control everything else and use your gold cards as leverage. Always keep Aridin and basically set a benchmark for your opponent to have to beat you to win the round, and use all your control cards to keep them from achieving that. I think that I'm working on it, but that's kind of where my monster's renaissance is right now. Like, I'm so about making that work because of how many people think that monsters are the underdogs right now. But it is true. They are fighting an uphill battle.
Yeah, it's just the synergy from monster removal got killed when Frightener got nerfed pretty hard there. And I thought Frightener was a nice card because, of course, it still gets hit by weather. So you can prep, you can counter it. Most factions don't have a hard time dealing with it, but it was a hammer that was interesting because monsters don't generate card advantage. Mm-hmm. So you just put out a big body and you're basically asking your opponent if they were cognizant of the fact that Frightener exists. And if they are, then they probably have a counter for it. But it was a nice card previously, and now some of those cards with those effects that are on timers and whatnot are just not appealing in the current state of things. So another thing to look forward to is kind of how they try and make that more relevant, those types of cards.
Frightener did honor to his name. I believe that the very first time that I saw 28 Frightener, something like that, I was like, oh my god, what do I do with this? It was terrifying. It was frightening, I'm telling you. And I think that this is also, for example, the concept of the monsters. You have weather monsters and then you have big monsters. It also can, they work against each other. Unlike other factions, that you can have a couple of dwarves and you can have elven mercenaries. Or, you know, that's one of those examples. It just counteracts each other, I feel.
Yeah, because you can't run weather in value. It just doesn't work.
Correct.
So you mentioned Seamal earlier, HG3, as being like the top Skellige player. I can't agree anymore because I've watched him play and I've seen where he is on the ranked leaderboard. And he has started a few of these new strategies, I think, that is helping Skellige work. What is your take on the state of Skellige right now?
I think Skellige are an okay faction. They're definitely number three. I don't think there's any debate to be had. They're number three, but because of the swarm meta, they have opportunities to pull these really big upsets, especially against Northern Realms, because...
Big Herald.
Yeah, Harold's value is, it clocks in at somewhere around 24 or something ridiculous.
Which,
for any card in the game, if you got that much value on a consistent basis, you'd be like, I'm running this automatically every single time. Which is kind of funny because Seamal originally was shocking the world by running Crack on Crate.
Yeah.
And we're all like, why is he not running? I could not figure it out for the life of me. And then when he switched, I was like, okay, I'm not the one that's off here. He was just trying something out with the Commander's Horn combo to try and take round one. And then he just gave up on round one. He's like, never mind. It's not worth my time. And I like his kind of thought process and how hard it is to imitate him, which shows how good of a player he is. Because everyone tries to see what the best strategy is and you try and use it in the games and implement it. But he is just ahead of the curve in so many ways that, like, I don't even know what he's going to do. And his timing on his Commander's Horns is unique. He doesn't always wait for like the last moment. He gets it in when he knows he's going to get value. His first round passes can be there. They can also be disloyal into a pass. He can push you on the first round. Stuff like that makes him a top tier player consistently and a joy to watch, even though I don't speak whatever language it is he's speaking.
Yeah, he will greet you if you go in there and talk, though. He's a really nice guy because he probably knows who you are.
Yeah, well, I did infamously counter my own spell against him once, and people were showing me a clip of him laughing hilariously. That was in a very tilty and questionable sequence where I was trying to counter the Mardrum's bug player at the top of the ladder. I put in an Ida, I put in an operator, and I was just never going to let him Mardrum's. And I queued to try and hit him, which I hit him like 5 times that night. And that time I queued into C-Mail with this ridiculous deck, and it was just an absolute disaster. And apparently he enjoyed every second of it.
Yeah. I think that C-Mail is a true pioneer of this game. He's a true pioneer of Skellige, and he's so smart. He realized that the weakest point of Skellige's passive is turn one. So what do you do to don't go into turn one? Well, you don't play in turn one. And this gives all his hand an entire plus strength, plus value. And it, in a way, it's kind of, at the beginning, I was like, well, that's kind of insane. And now I'm like, oh my God, that is genius. Yeah. Because it's true. It's true. If your weakest point is turn one, I mean, round one, so then he doesn't do it. And also, it takes a lot of courage to do what he does. Sometimes I've tried to simulate his deck, and the way that he passes, that is, his courage is impressive.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. He is the Kenny Rogers of Russian Gwent players right now. He knows when to hold them, and knows when to fold them. His playstyle, personally, especially pioneering the round one pass as Skellige, it appeals to my sense of efficiency. Because if you think about it, Skellige, you know, in any matchup, you've got to win 2 rounds to win. Well, if you can pick which rounds you have to win, if you're Skellige, why not pick the 2 rounds that you're most efficient in, the 2 rounds you have the most strength in? Therefore, why not try and win rounds 2 and 3?
It takes the decision and the pressure of when to pass away when you just tune your deck to play 2 must-win rounds back to back with the bonus of Skellige's passive. And but I do think that it's actually very good that C-Mail has a deck strategy that works very well for him, that he plays very well, because it means that people who try to net deck that deck and take it into like the middle of the ladder may be a little bit easier to overthrow. I feel like it really speaks to skill cap. I think that the same technique that he can just put in his hands and just show you how it is, it's not something that's kind of pick up and play. And I like that there's a ceiling on skill for the way Skellige can be played. Although it is number 3, I think it is number 3. Yeah. But number 2, well, I think that number 2, number 1, I think this is a toss-up for me. I think that Northern Realms right now has some of the stuff that I dislike the most.
So,
but we can talk about Northern Realms next, I think.
Yeah, so you guys all know my opinion on the matter about Squirtle and how dominant they are. And I would tier them above Northern Realms for many reasons. But before we ask your guys' opinion about Northern Realms, I just wanted to say that when we talk about the tiering here, that maybe Northern Realms is on the same level of Squirtle or potentially higher, according to McBeard, it might be because Northern Realms is currently able to beat Squirtle more consistently than maybe any other faction can. And Squirtle just happens to be able to beat the rest of them.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. It's like a bit of a rock, paper, scissors up there right now. Where Squirtle, you know, they do get beaten by Northern Realms a fair amount of times, but they still come close to 50% against them, I think. Like, if things go your way, if you remove some of the Reaver Scouts and the Priscilla, you can pull off a victory. And then Squirtle is just vastly better odds against Harald. So it's like Northern Realms against Harald, if the Akvis shows up, I mean, me and Dunkaro say it all the time. You might as well just leave the game. It's like absurdly difficult to win at that point.
If they draw it, yeah.
Yeah, it comes down to them having Akvis on turn 2. They don't have to play round 1 at all. If Akvis exists, then good luck. Go home, have a drink. It's okay.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of like the circle of life there. And where Squirtle is struggling against Northern Realms, because Northern Realms have extremely powerful round 3. You will rest like 30 plus strength of value. While their thing, where the thing of Squirtle is that to weaken their enemy so they have a weak turn 3. And I think that that's why they're impacting so much to Squirtle. And on the other side, like Skellige is beating Northern Realms because Northern Realms is a swarm deck and it's easy to get Herald value. And you have these 3 factions fighting each other and monsters being like, let me in, let me in.
Well, I've actually had some success with Monsters Control against Squirtle because you can just always kill their mercs, like basically always kill them, at least in the deck that I'm running. But it does struggle against a bunch of other stuff, especially Northern Realms. I find that Northern Realms has been known for having these crazy explosive turns between the full test poor infantry that kind of sharply rose to power and then kind of plateaued a little bit. But that was still all about getting a very large poor infantry shawnied out on turn three, not needing any other cards, that being enough. And now with demoting Baron and demoting Yennefer and then shawnying back Baron into Lubberkin into Yennefer, it's so frustrating. Like, it's so explosive that I feel like I struggle the most against countering those turns where Baron can come out up to three times in a game. That's all I have to say about Northern Realms right now. I think like a lot of their strength comes from that combo, and I'm a very good feeling that it's not going to stay like that. But right now, I think that combo is huge.
This is a huge change that's going to be coming when Baron is changed. But what do you guys think would be maybe the best change to Baron in order to fix what he's able to accomplish in Northern Realms?
I think he's always been too versatile. I said it early on in beta. Like, anytime you give a unit a choice or two options, it just adds a significant amount more value. Like, for example, if he pops out with a Lubberkin on Northern Realms board, he's worth 12 strength, 8 being gold, and then 4 stays for 2 rounds. So if you're... I mean, Botchling, I think. Did I say that? I don't know. He stays for 2 rounds, so it actually ends up being 16 if he stays around. And then the other side, he gets a lot of value through the Lubberkin rest. So anyone that has options, I feel like, should have lower base value to represent the versatility. And that kind of is accommodated in the sense of, like, Zoltan Animal Tamer. Like, you have to give up the 3 strength if you want to do the minus on the opponent's board, or you can take the 3 strength on yourself and get the bonus. So I think that his versatility is kind of unchecked right now. And as such, if they're going to move away from the direction of Northern Realms having heavy reses, I can't really speculate on what they're going to do, because it's going to be a whole rework. And he'll have to be consistent with whatever field medics start doing and whatnot. But I think making him permadeath is probably the most obvious thing we've seen in the game. Aside from maybe the Milva, Roach, Cheese that exists right now. Those two things, anytime you tune into a stream... like, every streamer will be like, this shouldn't exist, but we're doing it because we have to. You know, stuff like that is just like Baron Rez and Milvo Roach is just crazy.
Well, I had a conversation with Don Coro about this card, and he came to the decision, and he showed me why. That he believes that Baron is the best medic in the game.
Yeah.
And it's true, because you have, like AG3 said, the versatility and adaptability. And sometimes you might not even have to break him for him to have a huge impact on the game. Now, on the other hand, you can see him 3-4 times in one game. And there is not much that you can do about that. Well, and as far as the rest goes, I agree with all of you guys. That shouldn't be there and needs to have a fix, some kind of a fix.
Are you talking about the res Lubberkin being able to res, or the fact that Baron can res at all, or the fact that you can res Baron with a medic?
All the above. Because if you think about it, okay? Yes, technically you try to kill the chain reses, but the reality of it is because he can summon a Lubberkin, you cannot stop that. There is no way for you to consistently stop that. His strength is too high for you to Madrom or... to play around it. So I believe that his strength has to be a little bit lower.
And if Lubberkin keeps existing, they can make Lubberkin relentless, and that would resolve some of the issues too. I think some of the res units right now could end up being relentless, and it would make perfect sense, because when you are able to Nineka or even Sig 2 times in a row, it's a ton of value, and it takes away from some other aspects that Decoy is supposed to be employed in.
Wow.
You're just like... single-minded, you have to decoy the res, and there's no other option, really.
Well, that's actually a really good point, because one of the complaints about decoy is that it's an auto-include in every single deck everywhere, and therefore it reduces the pool of silver choices. So if you make more cards relentless, you weaken the value of decoy, maybe thereby balancing it out.
Yeah, and I've been a big advocate of that, too, for a while, especially on cards like the gold and disloyal units, like Burn a Brand and Avalok. I think those units should be disloyal because should be relentless, excuse me, because it's insane when certain factions have ways to replay those cards and just get a fifth gold out of it. for almost no cost to them. Like, is it a big deal to break that card and play it out of grave? No. So stuff like that, and then of course Ithne being able to replay that and get a fifth gold automatically, it just undermines the entire existence of that card. So I think Relentless is gonna, it came in last patch obviously, or two patches ago. I think it's gonna start to show up on more cards as we go on, as they realize what's too strong and what kind of removes the actual versatility of cards like Decoy in the grand scope of things.
Maybe it's because it's newer, like the Relentless stuff. I feel like I'm worried about them just creating these keywords as band-aids for everything. I think that maybe it just needs a bit more of a visual, like a visual cue, like the way Resilient does. But I'm worried that it's, there's just going to be too much, you know, affecting this non-gold, non-relentless, like the wording and how like the tooltips get longer and longer as they keep adding these words. So while I do believe that what you're saying is true, that does help those cards. I would hope, I kind of hope that there's other avenues of changing it that make it a bit more easier to understand. That does make the game more complicated, I guess, just to try to solve these problems of power.
Yeah, as far as Decoy goes, I believe that it's also used because you come with a strategy, and if there is a whoopsie or something like that, you can redo it. And it's like, it's very reliable on those kind of situations. And as far as putting bandits on the game, so far I think that they have the right idea. Let's just hope that they don't overuse it.
Exactly. I'm with you on that one. So our last faction I'd like to talk about is Squirtle. Of course, this has been like the dominant faction because card advantage, deck thinning, power swings. The faction has pretty much everything. And we've talked about it for a number of episodes. I think this would be the third episode that we've talked in depth about Squirtle in some way or form. But it's hard to not talk about this deck. You can see all three leaders represented. We've already, HG3 has already called that out earlier in the episode. But all three leaders are represented. A lot of their bronzes are quite good right now. You can find a place for lots of them in competitive aspects. They can always fool you in ways because of ambush cards. There's not a lot that can be done when the deck can do all three of those things: card advantage, deck thinning, and power swings. Which of you two have had the most experience playing Squirtle, or have you both played a fair amount of it?
I'm pretty sure we both were forced to play Squirtle. Mm-hmm, yeah. But like, as far as Squirtle, hold my beer because I have a lot of things to say, and I'll tell you why. Okay, so first of all, on my personal opinion, the best bronze card for Squirtle is actually a neutral called First Light. Yeah. Okay, and First Light is giving you two options, okay? It's giving you to clear weather or to thin your deck, and that's fine. If you want to thin your deck, that's fine. Go for it. But why do you have the access to clear weather on your graveyard? On my personal opinion, the First Light should be a fleeting unit, and whatever spell you cast it from that should go into your graveyard. And also, the second best card for Squirtle, in my opinion, it's a silver neutral once again. It's Aeromancy. Once you place Aeromancy, like as a monster player myself, I have a lot of trouble trying to take away the Aeromancy and the previous Frost. For so, in my opinion, if you do Aeromancy, you should cast Aeromancy on any row, not create a Frost or create a Rain or a Fog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That'd be an interesting change because it does have to spawn that effect, and that's a defined effect in the game, and I think it's coded that way. I'm not sure how they could change Aeromancy, but I agree that having to, as you say, griffin out two of those cards is not easy to do. And every other faction knows, okay, that when Aeromancy sits in the graveyard of the Squirtle, that it's coming back.
Yeah, so this would be another nerf to Eglaze. Tech, kind of, like in a roundabout way. Like they, either that like, or, this card or is so strong all the time.
Well, everybody's, you know, running a glaze anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing, because she's still so good.
I've been talking about Aeromancy, whatever effect you spawn. So if you use Frost out of Aeromancy, only the Frost stays in your graveyard. And I think stuff like that would be a more simple fix. Like Aeromancy is the process of bringing it out. And then, so you have to, your opponent knows what's coming eventually. Like, it's not this huge mystery guessing game. Like, if the Frost was used once against monsters, you can expect it moving forward and try and work around it, whether it means, you know, trying to use your toad to invest most of your strength and keep it around instead of using a ghoul. I don't know how reasonable that is for monsters in particular, but for some other factions, like for Northern Realms, they can rez around the fact that Frost was used. Or for Skellige, they can try and bring back skirmishers instead of boats if they know that the torrential rain's there and they want to use their scalds to buff a row. So something like that would probably nerf a little bit. But Aglaice is, you know, again, versatility has, and utility have huge values that go unchecked often. And Aglaice is like the queen of versatility and utility. So like her taking a couple more hits wouldn't be the end of the world. She'd still get play. And like she's close to being the top, if not the very best card in the game right now. So even though she has taken a couple nerfs, I'm all for some more adjustments, some more tinkering to make her more in line with other things. Because right now they've tried to weed out a lot of those last round hammers is what I call them. Like the game-winning plays and the last play of the game. That's why Frightener doesn't exist anymore. That's why Isengrim got changed from the way he was. But Aglaice still accomplishes that in most areas because of the Aromancy last turn.
Yeah, because you can spend your whole... you can spend the first two rounds putting tools in her toolbox, basically. So she can do... It's like you have a gold card that's worth five that can do anything you want her to do. It is unchecked versatility. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, and that also Aromancy being changed to Fleeting just means that, as HG said, that it would be... keeping Frost in the graveyard, for example, and I think that would be an appropriate change and one that's not too difficult to make or foresee.
But it's also, I feel like it's a change that would exclusively affect Scoia'tael, not just because Aglaice would only be able to pull out the weather that you used, but also against Scoia'tael, like they can dodge the second weather if they know which row it's on, sure, but maybe some other class or some other factions aren't able to do that. So Frost may screw them in round one, but it could screw them as well in round three. So it's a change for Scoia'tael by Scoia'tael to do that. And I think, I'm not sure, like, it definitely limits it, but it feels like it's all, we're talking from a viewpoint of like a Scoia'tael dominated world. I think that's where some of these opinions are coming from, and I think that's definitely a testament to how strong this deck is.
But it doesn't seem like they're going anywhere soon. We've gotten every inclination from people in the know that Rally is here to stay, and they're fine with the way it's working. So I think if we create some ways to just make the gold cards be like less of a complete value gold set for Scoia'tael, where like such few cards can accomplish so much, then we're moving in the right direction of creating a greater balance. Because if you compare their set of golds to anyone, maybe outside of Northern Realms, it's just kind of absurd how much you can get. Like, if your opponent is on a pass and you mill the last turn, like you can talk upwards of 18-point swing. Stuff like that is, like, relative to, like, Monster's gold set or even Skellige's gold set, where there's conditions to make things good. Like, Gjalmar needs to actually kill off his Unvic. Like, there's no condition to make Milva good on a pass. Stuff like that... probably needs some adjustment if we're going to keep the other cards the way they are.
Well, thankfully this is beta, and huge changes are not uncommon in beta tests. So my hope is that we can get everything to, you know, a really great state, a really strong competitive and varied meta for launch. And then really the only challenge is adding the new cards. That would be But I feel like right now, with the way that the cards can change, any time that content comes in, like we got 20 new cards in the last patch, but we really got like 25, 30 new cards because like a lot of cards changed like to completely different permutations. So I think that the future is very unpredictable, but very, very exciting for the game right now. And I think that where we are right now, the tuning is maybe less drastic than it may have felt earlier on.
I completely agree with you. I believe that this is one of those situations when we have just tasted the frosting and we're judging the entire cake. Once again, like, because Gwent is so good, we seem to forget that it's a brand new game. We're still on a very early beta. And if you think about it, I think that the future looks good. CDPR has done nothing to like for us to lose hope or anything. They constantly work with us. They constantly listen to our feedback, and I really appreciate that from those guys. You know,
I want them to make it rain bronze cards next wave. Yeah. Oh, I just want tons of bronze cards. Oh my, yeah. Forget about the silvers for every faction, the golds for every faction. That's nice and all, but yeah, bronze cards.
Built some new decks, guys. Yeah.
Bronze Age. I'm looking forward to the Bronze Age patch for sure.
Speaking of Bronze Age, I'm about to play some ranked mode. You guys want to tell everybody where we can find you and your content online?
Yeah, you can find us at GwentCity.com is where you're going to find our videos. It links you directly to our YouTube channel, and we upload daily there, so be sure to check that out. And then I'm HG3. I have my personal stream, which is H_G3 on Twitch TV. So you can check me out there on weekdays around 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yep, the One City goes the same for me, and my Twitter is XDManti. Somebody took the other one!
Oh.
And my Twitch is twitch.com/MantiXD.
So thank you so much for making the time and the short notice and just kind of just jumping into the call. And we said, hey, here's what we're going to talk about. Let's go. And just nailing it, you guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
No problem. Thanks for having us. Thank you for having us.
Great to have those two on the show. Hope they can join us again sometime, and we'll be having more guests for you throughout the year. I hope you enjoyed that.
I know I did. That was fantastic having them on. Those guys are so much fun.
Before we go, we wanted to recognize our patrons. As you may or may not know, Commander's Horn has launched their Patreon at patreon.com/CommandersHorn. Audience members can pledge their patronage to us to help support what we do, help us improve our content. And today we would like to recognize Ian A.,
and Devil Driven,
Chris M,
and Copo.
Thanks so much for being commandos and joining us on this journey of Commander's Horn.
Commandos!
All the people that join us on Patreon and pledge their support do have access to our Discord channel, where we have, you know, a fair amount of discussion. That discussion is always increasing the more people that join us. So definitely hang out with us on Discord if you haven't, if you are a patron, or if you'd want to join us, check out the patron page. Once again, patreon.com/CommandersHorn.
We want to thank all of you patrons for getting us more than halfway to our first goal of achieving additional hosting. And we want to be able to bring you more podcasts and more content, and we are already on our way there. Thank you so much to our patrons.
That's great. And Gray Boxer, before we go, where can people find you when you're not on Commander's Horn?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at GrayBoxerGwent, and I'm streaming Monday through Friday from 6 p.m. CET until 10 p.m. CET on twitch.tv/GrayBoxer.
And you can find me at McBeardCH on Twitter, as well as Twitch at McBearded. I am streaming weekdays, Monday to Friday. I start at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central European Time. I usually go to around 7. Thursdays are usually shorter streams. Fridays are usually longer streams. And we've been playing Ranked Monsters all week, and I don't think I'm going to stop. I think I like it.
And you can get your 7 to 8 hour fix of Commander's Horn on the daily on the Twitch.
We'd like to thank everybody for listening. Once again, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Horn. You can email us at CommandersHornPodcast@gmail.com.
And we appreciate you hanging out with us today. But until next time, this is Gray Boxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck.
On the path.